Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Asafo podcast. I'm your host, Asafo Shaka Sekou. Unfortunately, our co-host, Jamie Fowler, was not able to be with us today, and he'll be back with us next week. He's got some other things going on, so he couldn't join us today. We have a lot to cover in a short time to cover it, so we're going to try to move right on into what we have to talk about. But first off, though, we want to do a couple of housekeeping items here. The Asafo podcast is brought to you by PISB Publications, information and inspiration for the Black working class. Our website is www.pisbpublications.wordpress.com. Again, that is www.pisbpublications.wordpress.com. Also from PISB Publications, we have the new book or the new compilation of Reflections of a Black Socialist, the catalog, and that was recently published by PISB Publications and is now available at Amazon for $10 plus the shipping and cost of shipping and handling. All right, so Reflections of a Black Socialist, available at Amazon or at the PISB Publications website. And the cost is $10. Want to highlight the fact that Bibi Fahodeh Magazine will be producing its second edition in hard copy and PDF. Its March edition will be available on March 15th. We have our first edition that's also available free of charge. So if you would like a copy of either edition, again, the first edition is out right now, and the second edition will be available on March the 15th. If you would like a PDF or a hard copy of either one, please email Damien Fowler at damienfowl@gmail.com. That's damienfowl@gmail.com. Okay. Now, we also want to, for this week's business highlight, focus on two great businesses, two great Black-owned businesses in our community. The first one is Fresh and Clean Cuts. They have a great barbershop. I went to school with the brother who owns the shops. His name is Brother Sim Chestnut. They do great haircuts, fades, shape ups, things like that, and great customer service at very reasonable prices. Walk-ins and VIP appointments are available. They have two locations. The first location is in Conway, South Carolina. The address is 2258 East Highway 501, Conway, South Carolina, 29526. And their number is 843-234-3930. Okay, and their hours are from Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. The second location is in Myrtle Beach. So there's a Conway location that I just gave you the information for, and then there's the Myrtle Beach, South Carolina location. 501 Burt Grissom Parkway, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, 29577. Their number is 843-448-3964, and their hours are from Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Okay, so the Conway location, their hours are from Monday through Saturday. Myrtle Beach, Tuesday through Saturday. Both locations close at 6. During the summertime, they extend the hours till 7 p.m. All right, so let me give you the numbers one more time. 843-234-3930. That's for the Conway location. And the Myrtle Beach location is 843-448-3964. Okay, that's the Myrtle Beach location. All right, so if you're ever in the Myrtle Beach or Horry County area and you need a haircut, be sure to stop by in one of those locations and get a great haircut. I go there all the time. It's one of my favorite places to get my haircut, and they do a great job. And, you know, I would support them any day of the week, so go and check them out. The second business that we want to highlight this week is the Black Collective. Many of us who listen to this show may be familiar with this company. They are an online digital media network, and they cover news, events, and they offer commentary geared toward the African-American community. So they cover things, they cover news, events, and they provide commentary from an African-American perspective, and a perspective that's relevant to Black people. The Black Collective, they're also producing a film. It's called Vessi's Resistance. It's a film directed and produced by Jason Gordine, and it's set against the antebellum South. Vessi's Resistance follows Denmark Vessi, a free slave, and his resistance army's plot to destroy the nation's fortress of slavery, the city of Charleston, South Carolina. In the name of full disclosure, I should also say that I'm also a writer for the Black Collective, and I'm personally proud of the work they do. Jason Gordine is a close friend of mine. We were students together at Morris College in Sumter, South Carolina, and he's been a friend of mine for a long time. And we're proud here at the Sophol Podcast and at PISB Publications to support the Black Collective in any way we can. So their website is www.blackcollective.net, www.blackcollective.net. And the Denmark Vessi movie that their group is working on will be coming out soon. Just visit their website for more information on that. Okay. Now, we have, like I said, we have a limited amount of time for this week's podcast. So we really want to, on our description, we said that we were going to try to cover two articles, two very important articles that are highlighting two different aspects, but very important aspects of the Black liberation struggle. Okay, the first one is covering the fight, or what needs to be the fight and the movement for free tuition at HBCUs and public colleges and universities. Now, the title of this article that I'm about to read portions of, is we'll going to try to get these articles both covered during the span of the podcast. But this first one is titled Time for a Movement for Free Tuition at HBCUs and Public Colleges and Universities. And the writer of this article is Bruce Dixon, who is a writer for Black Agenda Report, and another great website for news and commentary from the Black left perspective. So if you ever get an opportunity, check out blackagendareport.com. All right, so let's begin. He begins the article this way. Black folks with nothing better to do were up in arms for a day about Kellyanne Conway's feet buried in the Oval Office sofa, her phone, while the presidents and chancellors of historically black colleges and universities crowded around Donald Trump's desk. You know, we all seen that infamous picture with a representative, a surrogate for the Trump administration, Kellyanne Conway, very inappropriately kneeling, I guess, on I'm looking at the picture now as I'm saying this, kneeling on the couch with her feet buried in it, with her, you know, toying with her phone. As bad as that is, you know, Mr. Dixon tells us that that's not something that we should be concerned about. Let's continue on with the article. Some others have written about Betsy DeVos, who is our current Secretary of Education, her note on HBCUs, which revealed her stunning and self-serving ignorance of their being the HBCUs, history and origin, but pointing out how disrespectful or stupid key members of the Trump administration is partisan BS that won't save a single college education, let alone remedy the desperate situation of our historically black colleges and universities. Okay, so Dixon is talking about putting our priorities in order. Of course, it's easy to pick on Kellyanne Conway and Betsy DeVos and other members of the Trump administration. They're, you know, suspected white supremacists, obviously. They're, you know, morons, so it's easy to pick on them. But Mr. Dixon says we need to focus on something that's a little bit more important. And what is that? He continues. Right now, the heads of HBCUs have an historic opportunity to save their institutions by stirring up a movement from below for free tuition for HBCUs and for all public colleges and universities, for loan forgiveness for students at public universities, interest reductions for all students, and for getting the federal government out of the student loan business. So he says what we should be focusing on is free college, free tuition at HBCUs, also free tuition at public colleges, a decreasing in interest rates, and also getting the federal government out of student loans, dealing with the student loans. Mr. Dixon continues, and I quote, free college tuition is not impractical pie in the sky. It's not an impractical idea. Germany does it. France does it. Norway and a dozen other countries do it. State universities in California and Louisiana did it for decades in the 20th century. It was a cornerstone demand of Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign that earned him millions of votes. Free college education is what modern human societies do when they recognize that education is a public good and not a private privilege. Now, Mr. Dixon goes on to explain exactly where would the money come from? And he says a nominal tax on Wall Street and reallocation of federal funds that now go to student lenders would easily pay for a free tuition. And it's important that I take a moment here. I'm gonna come back to the article in a minute. General, you need to focus on this general idea of priorities. We live in a country that is willing to spend billions and billions of dollars on its war machine, additional billions of dollars, millions if not billions of dollars on its criminal justice program, its prisons, its, you know, police forces and things like that. But, you know, you have millions of people who are voters the so-called middle-class white voter who is so, so concerned about fiscal responsibility, tightening our belts and being conservative with how we spend our money, doesn't mind spending millions and billions of dollars on the war machine that's going to be used to oppress black and brown people all over the world, and also the criminal justice, so-called criminal justice apparatus that will be used in this country to suppress the uprisings of the working class black people and the oppressed in general. No problem spending millions and billions of dollars on that. But when it comes to free health care, when it comes to adequate child care, when it comes to free quality education, oh, no, we don't have money for that. Okay, you're just chasing a pie-in-the-sky dream. So we really need to focus on what is more important. Clearly, the overwhelming majority of white America sees the cornering off, the locking down, the suppression of any resistance movement that will come from the black working class as more important than making sure that members of the black working class are able to have adequate child care, adequate health care, and things of that nature. So we need to focus on priorities, okay? And Mr. Dixon is telling us that we need to push forward now with a movement that's focusing on free college education. Now the time has come for that. Let's continue with the article. HBCUs were founded with white philanthropy beginning in the 1860s because the newly freed black population urgently needed teachers and other professionals, and because white colleges rarely admitted black students. Black student access was still being litigated in the U.S. 9 decades later, and to this day, HBCUs produce a far greater percentage of highly coveted black college grads than other institutions. But the leaders of our HBCUs have largely failed to envision ways to fund their institutions outside of white philanthropy and occasional special government funding directed exclusively at them. The United Negro College Fund has even accepted Koch brother money with many nasty strings attached. It's time to stop digging that hole deeper. You know, when I was reading this article in preparation for this show, I was surprised. I actually did not know that the United Negro College Fund was accepting money from the Koch brothers. You know, the Koch brothers being these barons of these energy barons, these oil barons and what have you, who are enormously wealthy and use that wealth to fund, right-wing causes. So for the United Negro College Fund to be accepting money from the same group of people, from the same brothers who I would presume put millions and millions of more dollars into organizations that would also suppress black people, that's a bad mark on the United Negro College Fund. Okay? But we've learned, if history hasn't taught us anything, it's taught us that as black working class people, we need to be very, very vigilant and very, very suspicious of the black bourgeoisie. Because, we know from history and we know from the political reality that we face now that the black bourgeoisie will pretty much take money from anybody. Okay? Anyone who will give them enough money to maintain their particular lifestyle and keep them separate from the black working class and the working poor in general, the black bourgeoisie will take money from them. And the United Negro College Fund is a premier example, and they may, on a very superficial level, have money to help black colleges and universities and things like that. And this is extremely important. But we cannot forget that, along with the minimal good that they do, that there's a lot of bad going on in the background, okay? Let's continue on right now. Millions of college graduates, not just black ones, are crushed by unpayable student debt and lack of opportunities, and they have proven receptive to the idea of free college tuition. It is a movement waiting to be galvanized. The Trump administration won't much like it any more than Hillary did. But free college tuition for HBCUs and public institutions is something that can be accomplished in a decade or so if in a decade or so of agitation and struggle. If our HBCU college presidents are truly leaders and not followers, this is the current they must tap into. They can tap into. Last paragraph. Of course, the common wisdom is that nobody is more conservative than a black college president. It's a stereotype some of them will have to violate to save their institutions and to save the very idea of education as a public good and not a private privilege. If the first black president did not save HBCUs, nothing Donald Trump is willing to give out will do the trick either. It's time to really bargain, to demand what is not being offered. And if our historically black college presidents lack the political vision and intestinal fortitude to do it, maybe we need to start this movement without them. Okay? Now that's the end of the article. Now, the article is extremely accurate. It's a call to arms, so to speak. It's giving us a challenge to, as we're talking about voting rights, as we're talking about ending police brutality in the community. These are very, very important things that we should be focusing on. But also to our agenda, we need to be adding the idea of no college tuition for the colleges and universities. You know, as I was reading this just now, I was reminded of the article mentions Bernie Sanders and how he was pushing on his agenda for there to be, no tuition at public colleges and universities and what have you. Now, one of his most prominent detractors was Representative John Lewis, the compromised so-called civil rights icon, who was, of course, speaking as a surrogate for the Clinton presidential campaign. He came in and, this supposed civil rights icon who was working, superficially, we can presume, working to maintain the vision and the dream of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He came on and said that we need to be realistic, kind of putting down Bernie Sanders' idea of free college education. You know, he says, oh, nothing is free. It's pie in the sky. Bernie Sanders is being unrealistic. So this idea of free college education is something that we as black workers are going to have to push beyond our black leadership. As the Black Agenda Report says, the black misleadership class, they're going to be against it. Okay, because there are certain forces that pay out large sums of money to the black misleadership class and uses them as a front to lull black workers to sleep. And unfortunately, effective of his, civil rights background, Representative John Lewis is a compromised figure. He's been compromised, and he really shouldn't be trusted by us. And if we had any brains, we would, cast him out, to the dustbin of history, so to speak. Of course, he did great things as a member of SNCC, and we should, never forget that. But the great things that he's done in the past are now being outweighed by his willingness to compromise and willingness to allow himself to be really a surrogate and a servant for the Clinton political machine. This is the idea of college education being free is something that we should seriously, seriously consider. And putting that on the agenda. It's not going to be an easy fight, just like free healthcare is going to be an easy fight. But this is something that if it's worth doing, we're going to have to put all of our attention into, and all of our strength and efforts and energy into. And it's not going to be tomorrow. We're not going to get this stuff tomorrow. It'll be a couple of decades before we start cracking that barrier and tearing away at it. But we have to stay the course, and we can't lose sight of the long-term goals. All right? Now, our second article that we wanted to cover tonight was another article from the Black Agenda Report from the Freedom Rider blog. And the title of the article is Liberals Expose Themselves. Okay, and the author of this article is Margaret Kimberly. Okay, and she's the Black Agenda Report editor and columnist. And the article goes this way. George W. Bush vowed not to criticize Barack Obama. Quote, he deserves my silence, unquote. He added for good measure, quote, I love my country more than I love politics. I think it is essential that he be helped in office, unquote. Anyone needed additional proof that Obama was a servant of the ruling classes, Bush certainly provided it. But Donald Trump is getting less love from his fellow Republicans. Bush could have exercised the same self-imposed silence in regards to Trump, but instead he made a thinly veiled critique of his remark that the press are the enemies of the people. Quoting Bush again, I quote, I consider the media to be indispensable to democracy, that we need the media to hold people like me to account. I mean, power can be very addictive, and it can be corrosive, and it's important for the media to call to account people who abuse their power, whether it be here or elsewhere. Margaret Kimberly continues on. Fine words, but they don't mean much to a man who used a compliant corporate media to wage war and attack our civil liberties. She's speaking about George Bush. Media were certainly indispensable to Bush. They wouldn't even use the word torture when describing American brutality. Harsh, quote, harsh interrogation techniques, unquote, and other such weasel words appeared in order to keep the press in his good graces. Bush and Obama certainly knew the media were essential to helping to normalize their agenda of American aggression and the enactment of neoliberal schemes at home. So Mrs. Kimberly is saying what? You know, first of all, let's not give a standing ovation to George W. Bush for speaking out against Donald Trump. Okay, first it was veiled, as Margaret Kimberly says, it was veiled. It wasn't an outright condemnation of what Trump has done, first of all. Secondly, we need not try to give George W. Bush any accolades now for speaking the truth, or, you know, some semblance of the truth, when everything that Donald Trump has done now, including benefiting from American Islamophobia, came from what he has done. He is one of the main sources behind the Islamophobia that exists in America now. You know, with the what happened during the 9/11 terrorist attacks, George W. Bush used that as really a linchpin to try to attack Muslim nations and also attack Muslim people, either in this domestically or abroad. So the fear now that many Americans have of Islam and people who practice the religion of Islam was ginned up and stirred up during George W. Bush's administration. So he gets no applause. He should have no applause from us, because he's just as much responsible for Donald Trump as anyone else. Margaret Kimberly continues on. Liberals immediately joined in praising Bush's simple statements, even though they always said, they hated him. just a few sentences directed against Trump were enough for them to say that they respected him, or that maybe he wasn't so bad, or that Trump made him look better than they recall. In this country, presentation is everything. Corporate media play their role in making sure that no one gets into office who isn't committed to the status quo. Trump upended that arrangement and has exposed the shallowness and perfidy of the liberal classes. Donald Trump's policy on the deportation of undocumented people will surely result in great suffering. Ramping up the U.S. police state is always dangerous, but it should not be discussed without pointing out that more than 2.5 million people were deported under the Obama administration, more than any other president. Let me repeat that again. Pointing out that more than 2.5 million people were deported during the Obama administration, more than under any president. Okay, keep that in mind. He may have talked a good game and said, si se puede, but it didn't keep anyone from being kicked out. Obama proved that if the presentation were slick enough, anything could be acceptable to the media and to the masses. They deliberately misinform. The same can be said for other Trump pronouncements. The same can be said for other Trump pronouncements that have caused so much angst. He may post a tweet about increasing America's nuclear arsenal or calling the most recent agreement with Russia a bad deal, but Obama spent $1 trillion on a nuclear weapons upgrade, all with little protest from people who think themselves leftists. Trump says he will request a 10% increase in defense spending, a shocking figure given that the military budget is already insanely large. He also said that he won't consider Social Security or Medicare for any budget reductions. Obama declared more than once that entitlement programs would be, quote, on the table, unquote, for budget cut consideration. He opened his first 2012 debate with Mitt Romney by declaring that they agreed on cutting these programs that Americans need to survive. Only Republican intransigence prevented him from making good on these plans. They were once called the third rail of politics, dooming anyone who suggested cutting back on the safety net to political defeat. But it is Trump, the right-winger, who announces protection for programs that were once identified solely with the Democratic Party. Okay? So what Ms. Kimberly is saying is that, of course, we want to attribute to Trump all of the bad things and all of the terrible policies that he is proposing. But let us not forget, we can never forget, that first George W. Bush, then also Barack Obama, are largely responsible for the executive overreach that now Trump is benefiting from. Okay? Trump said he was going to develop a deportation force to deport millions of undocumented workers out of the nation, okay, out of the United States. Barack Obama was doing that, okay, more so than any other president, and with the aggressiveness, more aggressiveness than any of the previous presidents, okay? As the article points out, 2.5 million people were deported during Obama's administration, more so than any other administration before that. Additionally, we can't forget that while Trump was saying, don't worry, I'm going to protect your Social Security and your Medicare, which, you know, Trump is a known liar, so we should always be, suspicious of that. We should always be suspicious of that. But it was Obama who outwardly stated that Medicare, Social Security were, quote, on the table, meaning what? They would, if there was enough pressure on him to cut these things, he would definitely cut them, okay? And wasn't concerned about whatever, the fallout that would affect millions of people who need these programs to survive. Okay, let's continue on. Talk of resisting Trump is useless without exposure of past and present Democratic Party treachery against their voters. Smooth-talking Democrats have given cover to one monstrous plot after another. Bill Clinton ended the right to public assistance. Barack Obama bailed out the financial sector with trillions of dollars. Now liberals have nothing to say for themselves except attacking Trump's low-hanging fruit and never asking themselves about what Democrats have done. They continue to a ceaseless attack on Russia, a country that has done no harm to the United States, and act in concert with Democrats and Republicans in the war party. They also go so far as to quote dubious sources in intelligence agencies and now vouch for the credibility of George W. Bush. Now she's talking about the liberals now. Now you're doing everything, now you're becoming hypocritical, you know, because you're jumping on the bandwagon for everyone who attacks Trump, whether they're on the right or the so-called left, okay? And you're not even looking into the things that the Democratic Party has done to precipitate a Donald Trump. Opposition, the article continues, opposition to Trump, the quote-unquote resistance, it is called, will be useless without a wholesale rejection of the Democratic Party. There could be no resistance, no resurgent progressive movement if the Democrats and their wretched history aren't cast away for good. Liberals have exposed themselves as being weak at the very least and phony lovers of empire and elites at the worst. They were never really very different. Having a right winger in the White House has just exposed them all. Okay? So that's the end of the article. And that, again, that's Black Agenda Reports, Margaret Kimberly, a great article, and she's a great writer in general, so I would suggest you check her out. Her blog is called The Freedom Writer. Now, as we're wrapping up, this article points out to us a very, very important aspect of our fight for human rights as Black workers. We cannot forget for one second at all that the Democratic Party is just as much of an enemy to working class people in general, and specifically working class Black people, as the Republican Party. They're both two sides of the same coin as far as I'm concerned. Okay? And every election season, they come in here, and the same type of trick that the Hillary Clinton campaign tried to run on us, you know, vote for us because we're not Donald Trump. I live here in South Carolina, and whenever there's an election, you don't see the Horry County Democratic Party coming into the Black community until the election times come around. They come into to our churches, they bring us chicken and fish dinners, okay? They tell us, you know, they lecture us about how our ancestors died for the right to vote, and you know, tell us how bad it's going to be if we allow the Republicans to get into office. Usually they have some loudmouth activists from the community to come in and step in and preach, hoop and holler to the audience, and then pass out the chicken and fish, to eat, you know, and then, you know, start registering people to vote and what have you. It's the same old game run every time, every election, okay? And then when we elect these people into the offices that they're running for, they do absolutely nothing but smile in our faces and give very, very moderate things, okay? Because that's their one thing that they have to lean on. You know, they'll always get Black people because they know we have nowhere else to go. In their minds, they'll think that we have nowhere else to go because we're certainly not going to vote for the Republicans. So in their minds, they'll say, well, they have no choice but to vote Democrat. So it's not really anything that we really need to do with them other than be a Democrat. Okay? And it's really the same thing that happened with the Obama administration. On our agenda, in our continued struggle, you know, during this episode, we focused on now expanding the agenda, expanding the struggle, talking about free college education, talking about now realizing the hypocrisy of the so-called liberals and the so-called Democratic Party. Okay, now during the last election, I voted for the Green Party. I voted for Jill Stein and the Jammu Baraka. Okay, and there were some other Green Party candidates who were running for offices representing, you know, Orange County, and voted the straight Green Party ticket. So we have here a potential force that, even though it floundered during the 2016 campaign, the Green Party represents an organization, an alternative that black people, especially the black workers, I don't, you know, very rarely will we have, you know, the black bourgeoisie commit class suicide and vote against their own interests. You know, and those of them that do, you know, that's fine. You know, I would support that. Okay. And when I say this, I wish I could say that I'm talking to all black people, but I know I'm not, because many in the black bourgeoisie really don't give a damn about poor black people. They'll do whatever they can to enrich themselves while harming the interests of the black working class. So when I speak, I'm speaking to the black working class. The working class, the working poor, black folks just like myself, who go out here and work a 9-to-5 and try to struggle to make ends meet, okay? As we organize, we must have an alternative, okay, from this ridiculous two-party system. And I feel like more so than many of the other political parties, the Green Party has represented the interests of the black working class, okay? So, and this is not an endorsement. I'm not a formal member of the Green Party, so this is not a full out endorsement, so to speak, you know. But I think they represent an alternative to the same old mundane type of, you know, lesser two evils type of modality of voting. So we definitely need to consider that. But even if we ultimately decide not to go along with the Green Party and not to, you know, not to pledge our support behind the Green Party, these things that we talked about tonight, along with many others that we'll get into in coming shows, are definitely needed in our agenda. And we need to be willing to fight and push forward and do whatever is necessary, by any means necessary, as Malcolm said, to push forward and get our interests and our agenda on the table, okay? And I've always been of the opinion, I've said this in earlier shows, as we wrap up, if the system isn't going to work for everybody, we as working class black people need to do whatever it takes to make sure it doesn't work for anybody. Either it's going to work for everybody or it's not going to work for anybody, okay? That's how we need to be, okay? We need to get in these people's faces. We need to get in these buildings and lock these buildings down if need be, put our bodies on the line if need be. Harry Belafonte said it very, very clearly. We got some ass kicking to do out here, and we're not going to get it done, you know, just sitting around and waiting on the Democrat savior to come in so we can vote for that person. Okay? I'm going to leave you on that note. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back next Monday with another episode. And, of course, we'll have Jamie back with us as well. So you all have a good night.